It's in the center of Mayapur. And Mayapur is in the center of Antadweep. And Antadweep is in the center of the whole of Navadweep with the eight other petals of the different islands all around the outside. And in the middle, just as when you see a flower, it has a stamen in the center, or a lotus flower, it has a small section in the center and the petals all come out from there. So similarly, Antadweep is the smallest. You said it's the smallest of all the islands. But in some ways, of course, it's the most important because it was here that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. And in Navadweep, Mayapur is where the Gokul of Vrindavan appears in Navadweep here. So this is the home place of Satchimata and Jagannath Mishra. So many pastimes took place at this very spot, in this area, that we can only begin to just describe a few of them. First of all, as we were seeing, as we were going around, you saw the Shivalinga. So in every place also you'll see all over Vrindavan, Mathura, Rajmandal, Gauramandal, there are two personalities who protect the Dham. One of them is Lord Shiva, and the other one is his wife, who is Yogmaya or Mahamaya, depending on the role that she's playing within the heart and mind of a particular person. So if somebody is coming here to Mayapur and they seriously want to make spiritual advancement, no matter how unqualified they are, no matter how embarrassed they are by their background and all their bad qualities, if they come in this mood, then they will definitely receive the mercy of these two personalities. Lord Shiva, as we heard yesterday, he's the presiding deity over false ego. So if you want your false ego to be a little less impacting, we have to pray to Lord Shiva. And Mahamaya, Yogamaya, Prodamaya is her name here. She appears as Prodamaya. She can be Yogamaya for those who want to be brought into union, because yoga pit, yoga means to connect. Yogamaya means the energy of Krishna that brings a soul and Krishna or Lord Chaitanya closer to each other. And Mahamaya, of course, takes one apart and causes one to forget Krishna, pushes you away and pushes you down. So if somebody comes here with very worldly sentiments, then these two personalities know just what to do to make them feel very happy and pleased with themselves. And off they go and they feel they've had a very good time, but actually they haven't even attained the beginning of a desire to enter into the actual nature of Lord Chaitanya's Dham. So this doesn't refer to ourselves, because we've all come here with a curiosity and whatever capacity of desire we have to somehow or another become closer to Srila Prabhupada, closer to the process of Krishna consciousness, and to understand Lord Chaitanya, and then to go and understand Jagannath Puri, and then to also go to Vrindavan and take our darshans there. So we can pray to Lord Shiva, Gopishwar, he is the master. Gopishwar Mahadev, we'll see him also in Vrindavan, fully manifest in his most direct form. Gopishwar Mahadev, he stands like the chokidar, the guard at the gate of the rasa dance. And only those who have the right sentiments can actually enter into even hearing about the rasa dance. If one has a male egotism, and a male egotism doesn't just mean a male body, but it means the desire, I am the controller, I am the master, I am the one who's doing this and who's doing that, I am the one. Then with that male egotism, Lord Shiva will say, no, you can't come here, because only the people can come here, they have to be female. The gopis are dancing with Krishna. Krishna is the only male. So male means the controller, female means to be subordinate, to want to give pleasure to someone. This is the definition. Lord Shiva controls the male false ego, and Durga Devi, she is the personification of the female false ego. So we pray to them both, please, by your mercy, may you please inhibit my false ego so it won't get in the way very much, and I can hear these pastimes with an open heart and an open mind. So this new temple was established first. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur established the temple in 1893. And he went personally door to door in Calcutta and anywhere else that he could to collect the funds to buy this property and also to build the temple. But that was a very small temple. And at that time he installed the deities on the central altar. Then in 1934-1935, the main temple, as it is now, was established by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to finish off, to follow up the work of his father. So in 1906, this temple actually was opened with the main deities, Gaura Gadadhar and Lord Nrisimhadev. And as I said, it was another 30 years approximately before this temple was established. So the reason that this place is called Antadweep, the central petal, as we have heard already, the nine islands of Navadweep are named after the different processes of devotional service. That means in one of those islands, one process of devotional service is very strong. So in Antadweep, this is the middle, the process, anyone knows what is the process of devotional service that one aspires for here? Atmanivedanam, surrender, self-surrender. That one comes to Antadweep and this is like, in a sense, it's the culmination point. It's the beginning and it's also the point that we're all seeking, to come to the point of self-surrender. Antar also, it means something very confidential. So the pastime that took place here was with Lord Brahma. Just as yesterday when we were at Godramdweep, we heard how King Indra came there after he had acted so harshly to the residents of Vrindavan by causing great storms and trying to actually kill them all. He felt very ashamed of himself and he was hoping that somehow or another he could come here and receive some benediction that would allow him to know that he would never do something like that again. This was Indra's plea, and he came here with Sarabi because she was the one who intervened between him and Krishna on his behalf to seek his apologies to be given. So Lord Brahma, he didn't do anything anywhere near as severe as King Indra. He just played a little trick. He just did a little thing, and only for a second. He wasn't angry. He wasn't trying to kill anyone. He wasn't doing anything mean or cruel. He was just playful. He just was in a kind of a moment. He wanted to test his mystic power and play a trick on Krishna. So he took the cowherd boys, he put them over here, and it was just a second of his time, which was a year of Krishna's time, that he put them there, and then he thought, oh, maybe I'd done the wrong thing. And immediately he went to have a look, but he saw they were there again. So when he saw they were there, he looked back over there, and he saw they were there, and they were here. For him, it was all taking place in just 1 second. And then he saw them as Vishnu forms, and then he understood that, oh my goodness, I have made a great offense. But his offense was minor compared to the offense of Indra. So Brahma came down and offered very, very, very exalted prayers. And sometimes it is said that after Krishna heard all of Brahma's prayers, he didn't say anything. He didn't say, that was very nice, and anyway, never mind, and I know you didn't really mean that. He didn't say anything. He remained very grave. And it was Brahma himself who excused himself. And he said, I think I should go because I've interrupted your pastimes and you should go on with your boyfriend's playing. And I think I should go. And he bowed down very quickly and he left. And Krishna didn't even say anything to him. So sometimes it is wondered, Indra did something so violent. Yet Krishna forgave him and told him that don't be careful of your pride. But with Brahma, he said nothing. So sometimes devotees conjecture backwards and forwards why it was that Indra appeared to get off, in a sense, more pleasantly than Brahma, who didn't receive any response from Krishna. And sometimes it is said that one of the reasons is because Brahma's position is so high. He's the first person in the universe, so for him to play a little trick like that is much more serious than for an ordinary person to play a little trick. He's playing a little trick to see if Krishna is Krishna, or if he's actually, his power is enough to baffle or surprise Krishna in some way. So Brahma felt very bad when he left. And he came here. And he was thinking to himself that I could have entered into those pastimes too. I could have been a cowherd boy playing there with Krishna. Why not? I could have been having fun. I could have been enjoying his association. But instead, what happened? I did this terrible thing. And why did I do this? Why did I interrupt his pastimes? Why did I disturb his leela like this? I've interrupted his enjoyment. Why did I do that? And then he reflected and reflected and reflected, and he said, it's because I have such a big false ego. Because I am Pita Maha, my grandfather. I am the top person, the father of everyone. I'm in such a position that naturally I'm thinking, I am so important. I am a very significant person. I'm the first person in the whole universe. So everybody, I am the one who takes care of everyone. So with this big egoistic conception, I have been fooled. I've cheated myself out of participating in Krishna's pastimes. But I don't want to miss out when he appears again in the form of Gauranga. Because we should understand that Lord Brahma on his planet, where time is different than here, every day, once a day, Krishna appears. And then soon after that, every day, once a day of Brahma's, Gauranga appears. So for him, it's every day. Every day he sees Krishna, every day he sees Lord Gauranga. For us, it's 1,000 Divya Yugas between one visit and the next. So it's an immense amount of time. But for Lord Brahma, it is just a daily affair. So he thought, I should come here to Navadvip and I should make like an advanced proposal to Lord Gauranga so that I don't find myself making the same mistake again. So he came here on his swan carrier. And he came and he practiced austerity, meditation, praying, purification for a very long time. And then Lord Gauranga appeared to him. And so he asked him, what do you want? And he said, I want that when you appear, I should be in such a low position that I should have absolutely no false ego at all. So that with no false ego, no pride in my heart, nothing like that in my heart, I can participate in your pastimes this time, and I will not cheat myself out of your association. So Lord Chaitanya became very pleased with him, and he said, yes, I will give you this benediction. You will be born in a family, just imagine, a family that's of yavanas, outside of the Vedic culture. This is Lord Brahma, the top personality. He's born into a family of meat-eating malechas, Muslims. Muslims are so beastly. They want, you know, Hindus, they want to kill them. They hate deities. They break down temples. They're so, they run all over India, causing so much difficulty to the pious people. And you, topmost person, you'll be born into that family. So if it was us, we would think, oh my gosh, that's a bit more than what I wanted. It's just hoping on a little, you know, drop, you know, but not like into the, you know, wow, you know, if you were told you're going to be born into the lowest class family, we would, all our mouths would drop open and we would be greatly disheartened by the benediction. But Lord Brahma was not, because he could keep in his memory what had just happened and he knew what he wanted and why. And so he was very pleased. And Lord Gauranga said to him, and you will be so humble by your birth that you will be my very dear, dear associate. And you'll be so humble that you'll always be able to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And by your constant chanting, you'll become known as the Namacharya, the Acharya of chanting the holy name. So he told him, also he told him very confidential things. Lord Chaitanya told him that I will appear here in Mayapur, and I have my own very private reasons why I am appearing in this form. It is not only to inaugurate the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, and it is not only because Advaita Acharya so fervently is calling and calling and calling that I cannot avoid coming, but it is also because I want to taste the very, very special and sweet nectar of the loving sentiments of the topmost of all devotees, Srimati Radharani. I want to taste the sweetness of her love. I want to taste the happiness that she feels in loving me. And I want to also taste my own wonderful qualities from her perspective. Because I cannot do that. They are my qualities. If I have something, I cannot, if I only by use of a mirror can I see my own eyes, my own face. I cannot see my own face. So similarly, Krishna is Krishna. He is full of sweetness. And one time he saw himself reflected in the beautiful marble pillars. And he thought to himself, who is this beautiful person who is so exquisite? And he became attracted to his own good qualities. And he thought, I wish that I too could taste what she tastes, because the transcendental, unlimited good qualities of Krishna are always increasing. So there's a contradiction. Something that you can say it's unlimited, but it's increasing. It's to its limit, but it will get more. It fills everything, but it will fill more. Krishna's qualities are like that. And even Ananta Shesh, who has thousands of heads, is glorifying Krishna day and night. He is like this, he is like that, he is so beautiful, he is like that, he is like that. And he never gets to the end of Krishna's qualities. So Krishna himself wants to taste himself. So Lord Chaitanya Prabhupada said, this is Krishna teaching us how to love Krishna. It's Krishna seeking himself. He said we should understand Lord Chaitanya like that. So here in Antadweep, Lord Chaitanya appeared in the role of a devotee, but in the beginning he disguised himself so thoroughly by the help of his yogamaya potency that nobody understood who he was. Nobody. Advaita Acharya, sometimes he would dance in ecstasy and it would appear that he understood something, but still even he was not allowed to understand that Nimai Pandit was actually the Supreme Personality himself. So he appeared here, as we know, on the full moon night of the Falgun season. And when he was born, the whole world, practically speaking, was chanting. Everyone was, because it was a full moon, because he's the moon itself rising. He's like the moon, likened to the moon. So why should the moon be present? So the moon, Rahu came, covered the moon with black spots, so that everybody, all the pious people, even the impious people, even the Muslims, they all knew, oh, this is a very inauspicious time. In India, when we were living in Vrindavan, when there was a lunar eclipse, we were told by the local people that you throw out all your grains in your house, everything, you throw it all out. It's all contaminated by the eclipse. You don't sleep when there's a lunar eclipse. It's too inauspicious. You don't eat at that time. All you do is you chant. You try to counteract the inauspiciousness of Rahu's presence in this way. So we as Westerners, we know nothing of any of these things. But this culture is very aware and conscious of the auspicious and the inauspiciousness. So everyone was in the Ganga and they were all chanting Hari 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 Hari, because they didn't want anything inauspicious to happen to themselves or their families. And in this very, very amazing atmosphere, Lord Chaitanya appeared. When he appeared, there were divine symbols on his body. And when his astrology was done by Nilambara Chakravarti, who was a family relative, he checked out all the different signs and he said, this person is so great, he's like Narayan. It is like he's God himself. And he will establish eternal, essential religious principles for the whole world. But still nobody, because of the power of Krishna's yogamaya, nobody took this, yeah, he's like Narayan. It's like if I say, your son is so beautiful, he looks just like Krishna. And you go, yes, thank you. And you think, yeah, he's praising me. No one takes it seriously, he looks just like Krishna. So, oh, he's Narayan, he's this, he's that. Yes, yes, he's beautiful, isn't he? Yes. And so the family members, they didn't take it literally that he was such. But as he began to grow, he went through all the different ceremonies. In 6 months he got his name, and they gave him the name, the ladies immediately gave him the name Nimai, because he was born under a neem tree. And Advaita Acharya's wife suggested Nimai because it would keep away any ghosts and spirits, because neem trees are very antiseptic. So this was the name that was given. But at 6 months of age he got his formal name giving, Nam Karana, and he was given the name Vishvambar. Vishva means the universe. Vishvambar means one who can protect and nourish and take care of the whole universe. So this was his official name. When he was still a tiny little baby, sometimes what he would do is when his mother and father would go out and he was just not crawling even, he was just months old, he would get up and he would take everything in the house for his own pleasure, and he would scatter it everywhere. He would throw things, break pots, and the oil would go everywhere. He would throw the rice on the ground. He would take all the thing, all the clothes, and throw them there and put this here and break the water pot. And the whole place would be a complete shambles. And the mother and father of Nimai's mother and father would come back in, and they'd see the whole house looked like some thieves had come and just thrown everything everywhere. And he's just lying there crying like a tiny baby. And they'd pick him up, and then they would conjecture, who did that? Who has come? Somebody must have come. What did they want? Why they did that? And he'd cry or look very innocent and very sweet. And in this way, he immediately began to show his extraordinary qualities. And one time here, there was a big snake came. So I don't know if any of you who've been in India have seen a cobra, actually seen one. Sometimes, perhaps on this trip, we will see somebody somewhere, maybe in Puri. They carry a basket and they sit down with a funny, yeah, you've seen?
Yeah, I've seen.
And they start playing, and the cobra comes up and it starts to dance and move its head. So Nimai was sitting out in the garden, because this was not then a temple, and a cobra came and it started to, and it was winding around and winding around, and he was hugging it, and then he found the cobra wound itself up, the snakes wind themselves up, and then he was sitting on the snake. Now, anyone from Gopinath Dham who's seen a snake knows that when you see a snake, you go, ah! And here he was just sitting on the snake, this little baby. And his parents came out, and they were completely, what to do? You know, the snake could bite him at any moment, and they didn't know what to do. And they were trying to think, and they were calling out, praying, calling out names of all demigods. And then they started, because it's very good, I read recently, if you chant the name of Ananta, Ananta Shesh, then it's very good for beginning things, or it's very auspicious. So when they finally, after calling out everything, oh Krishna, oh Bhagavan, oh Narayan, oh Ananta, then the snake sort of just very gently, slowly slithered away. And then Nimai went to try to chase it and catch it again. And they grabbed him very quickly and they took him inside. So the snake, it is said, was an antashesh. And this is why he was peacefully lying on the back of the snake. When he was a year old, they had the Anna Prashana ceremony, where they checked to see the proclivities of the child. And they placed gold and grains and the Srimad Bhagavatam before Nimai to see which one he would take. If they take the grains, they know they're going to be a farmer. If they take the gold, then you know they're going to be a Vaishya, a money maker. And of course, if they take the Bhagavatam, then you know that they're going to be very learned. So Nimai very, very easily came to the Bhagavatam and took it up and held it with his two hands. And everybody became very pleased. Jagannath Misra, your son, he's going to be a pundit. He's going to be learned like yourself. So they were very happy. And sometime after that, Nimai was one time sitting out here and he was eating dirt. And his mother came out and said, what are you doing eating dirt? Now we've heard, of course, in Krishna Leela, in Vrindavan, Krishna also, it said that he was eating dirt. But here he was quite openly eating the dirt. And so his mother came and said, what are you doing? You're eating dirt. And he was just a little baby and he said, but it's all right if I eat dirt. And she said, no, you can't eat dirt. It's so bad for you. You'll get sick. He said, but everything is dirt. Everything's a transformation of dirt. The grains are dirt. Everything's dirt. So what is the difficulty if I eat dirt? So in this way, he was speaking this philosophy of oneness. And his mother easily defeated him and said, no, this is not correct. Everything is a transformation of dirt. But when the dirt is transformed into grains and you cook it and you eat it, your body will become nourished and healthy. But if you eat something that is just dirt on the ground, then you'll become sick. So you should come inside and I will feed you some nice sweets. So he very happily complied. She brought him home. At this time also thieves came to steal him away because of his beautiful jewelry and ornaments. And they took him some distance. They were thinking they would take him on their shoulders while there was a big festival going on, and they would take all of his jewelry off. But he stayed on their shoulders and he bewildered them, and they went all the way to where they were going and came all the way back here. And when they went to put him down in order to now to take off his jewelry, they found that they were right outside his house, and everyone came running out and grabbed him and said, "Oh, he's returned. Oh, thank you, thank you." And they got so scared they ran away. And they said, "Where are those people? We want to give them a reward for bringing him back." So in this way he played. Also, the elderly Brahmin came to this place, and he sought to worship his Gopal deity. He was very happy, very self-controlled, very renounced, just traveling, wandering from place to place, carrying his deity of Gopal around his neck and some Shalagram Shilas. And he came to this place, and Jagannath Mishra was so happy to welcome him and invite him in, treat him as an honored guest, and feed him. But the Brahmana said, no, it's all right. And so Jagannath Mishra said, "Then you cook." He said, "I'll cook for my deity. You cook." And so he brought all the paraphernalia, the rice and everything for him to cook a nice meal. And as we know, he cooked the meal, and just as he was offering it, out comes this little baby boy, and he reaches up on the altar and he takes a handful and he starts to eat it. And the Brahmin goes, "Oh no." And then Jagannath Mishra comes in and says, "My son, what have you done?" And Nimai is looking very playful. And then the Brahmin says, "Anyway, never mind, he's just a small boy, you can't, little boys, they don't understand things, it's all right." And so then the Brahmin actually ended up cooking three times. So it took him a long time to cook. And the second time the first time he said, no, it's all right, and Jagannath Mishra convinced him, "Please cook again," and brought all, cleaned the place, began the whole ceremony again. And the second time when Nimai did it again, Jagannath Mishra had at that time, he'd taken him to a neighbor's house, and they had all the ladies taking care of him, and they were all playing with him and keeping him occupied, and still he came and still he stole the rice. And the third time the Brahmin was, it was late at night, and the Brahmin said, "Today I'm not meant to eat rice, don't worry." But Vishwaroop, Nimai's older brother, convinced him, "Please cook again." So they took, at that time, they took Nimai and put him in a room, and they locked him in the room, and they had a guard outside, and they had everything set up. And everybody, by Krishna's arrangement, Yogamaya's arrangement, they all went to sleep. And late into the night, the Brahmin finished his cooking. And again he started his offering, and at that point again Nimai came. And again he took a handful of rice and started eating it. And then the Brahmin really started to cry, and he said, what are you doing? And he said, "You keep calling me, I keep coming, you keep asking me to eat, and I come and I eat. What is the difficulty?" And then the Brahmin was confused, and then he showed him his form as Bala Gopal, and he explained that I am the person who you've been worshipping through. In your previous life, you came to Nanda Maharaja's place, and you cooked for me there, so I am the one who you're worshipping. And the Brahmin became so excited, and then Nimai told him, don't tell anyone who I really am, because now at this point, my identity is hidden, you must not say anything. So the Brahmin, then he started taking the rice and smearing it all over his body. He was like saying, I've seen. He was making a terrible noise in the middle of the night and smearing food all over his body. And everybody woke up and they came out, and he thought, I better be careful. and he tried to look composed, and he said, "Actually, my offering was successful." And he was, very nice. And he was thinking, "I should tell them, they don't know, it's their son. I should tell them." But then he remembered that he'd been told, don't say anything. So instead he decided that he would come every day, spend his time, move to Navadvip. He lived here permanently, and he spent all his time, as much time as he could here, with Nimai, with Sachi Mata and Jagannath Mishra. So then, as he grew older, he became ready for school, and they had the hair-cutting ceremony, long hair, tied up like Krishna, you see, in a little top knot. So his hair was cut. And then at that time there was the Karna Bodha ceremony, which is the formal beginning of education, where the child is taught how to write the Bengali alphabet. So Nimai was writing the Bengali alphabet, and he was beginning to learn how to read. And very, very quickly he became a good student. But at the same time, he was incredibly misbehaved. His favorite activity was to go down to the ghats. There were four or five main ghats down here by the Ganga that are now no longer visible. And all the pious people would go to the ghat. At least they would go there when they were bathing in the morning, and the ladies for washing their clothes, taking bath. And Nimai would go there and do all kinds of mischief. One of his favorites was to take all the ladies' clothes and put them on the men's side. Take all the men's clothes and put them on the ladies' side. When they come out of the water, nobody can find their clothes. So this was one of his antics, but he had many more. He very much liked to go in the water. And the brahmanas were very righteously saying their mantras. And he would stand up in front of them with a mouthful of Ganges water and spit it in their face. And they'd be so disturbed. And they had to come take their bath again. And again they'd dry and he'd come and spit it in their face. Or he'd splash them, and sometimes he would swim under the water. And when they were very, very right, religiously saying their prayers and so forth, he would grab their legs and they would fall over into the water. So he had so much fun, and he would do so many things. And when he would do these things, everybody actually enjoyed, as you can imagine, it would be so enjoyable, such a playful, naughty little boy. But as part of their amusement, they would go to his father, and they would tell him all these things he's doing. He calls us names, he climbs on our back, he scatters sand on our offerings, he sits down and says, offer to me. And he does so many things. He says, I'm the husband of the Ganges. Oh, all sorts of blasphemies, he says. He's so misbehaved. And when Jagannath Mishra hears all the things that his beloved son has done, he gets so angry, he gets a stick. And he says, I'm going down to the gut, I'm going to get that boy. And he's so angry, and then all the brahmanas say, no, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. And he says, you just told me all these terrible things that he's done, and now you're pacifying me and telling me, don't go and punish him. And they say, actually, we like these things that he does. We like him so much. And then the girls come, all the young girls of Nadia, they come to their mother Sachi, and they have their complaints. And they start saying that, you know, when we're making our offerings, because we all worship Lord Shiva, because by worshipping Lord Shiva we'll get a good husband, he comes and he sits down and he starts eating all our offerings. And he says, don't worship Lord Shiva, worship me. And then we say, Nimai, don't do this, this is so bad. And then he says, give all your offerings to me and I promise you that you'll have a very handsome young husband. And we say, Nimai, please don't tease us like this. And then he says, all right, if you don't give your offerings to me, I promise you that you'll marry an old, fat man. And he'll have so many co-wives. And he'll be mean to you. And they all cry. And they all go running home. And they tell their mothers. And everybody's disturbed. And sometimes they said he takes these little burrs, little seed pods that are like sticky. And he throws them in our hair. And he does so many mischievous things. And they show Mother Sachi their hair with all these burrs in it. And she says, this is so bad. She says, when he comes home, I'm going to punish him for this. And so they go away feeling happy. And when Nimai comes home, his father says, first he says, I'm going down to the gut. I've had enough. So he gets his stick. And meanwhile, somebody, one of Nimai's friends, goes and tells him. They're all playing down at the gut. He says, quickly, quickly, your father's coming. So Nimai says, okay, I'll tell you what to do. So then he says, when he comes, say, I haven't seen him. And so he gets on his clothes and everything. And he heads off home and walks in very, very friendly, all covered in dust and ink spots from school. No sign that he's been playing at the gut. And he comes home to his mother and says, where's my father? And he's down at the gut saying, where's my son? He's like, we haven't seen him. He didn't come here today. So he comes home and they look at him. They say, Nimai. When they look at him, he's so charming, he looks so innocent, like, I don't know what these people are saying about me. How could you believe these things? Look, I've been studying all day. Look at the ink on my hands from my writing, and I haven't even been to the ghat yet. Could you give me some oil so I can go down and take my bath? And he gets the oil and he says, I'll be back soon, and off he goes. And his parents think, what is this about him? He's so attractive. And even though they know he's so mischievous, they never can quite catch him, and they never actually ever really chastise him because they're so attracted to his beauty. So then, soon after that, when he was 9 years old, he received the sacred thread. And after that, Jagannath Mishra had a dream. Actually, before that, sometime earlier than that, Vishwarup, the elder brother of Nimai, he heard that his mother and father were trying to arrange a marriage. And so he left home immediately. And when he left home after that, Jagannath Mishra and Sachidevi were in so much distress because of his absence that Nimai started to control his misbehavior. And he started to become a very well-behaved boy because he had to pacify and console his parents in the absence of his brother. So then he became very studious and they were very happy, but Jagannath Mishra decided that actually he shouldn't study anymore because he'll become learned. When he becomes learned, he'll become a sannyasi. He'll also leave. So he decided not to stop his studies, no more studies. Nimai should stay at home. When Jagannath Mishra decided that, Nimai became extra naughty. He became so bad. He used to go around to the neighboring houses and lock people in the houses. They couldn't get out, even when they had to use the bathroom. And he used to steal things. Sometimes he would take one of the boys and make them hide and tell the parents that someone had kidnapped him. And they'd all go out looking for their son in great anxiety. Where is he? Where is he? And then he'd do so many naughty things. And finally he sat on the top of some very dirty pots. And from there, sitting on the pots, Mother Sachi told him to come down. He was a very dirty place. He said, no, I can't. I'm going to sit here. Why should I come down? She said, but this is not a suitable thing. You're a brahmana's son. He said, how do I know what's right and wrong? You don't send me to school. I don't know anything. So then Mother Sachi, she convinced him to come down, and all the neighbors came and they made a big fuss and they said, you don't send me to school? He's such a learned boy, you don't send him to school? And Jagannath Mishra became rather embarrassed, and so much social pressure, he decided again that Vishwamba should go to school. So when he was 8 years old, he became the top student of all the students at Gangadasa school. He was so excelled in all of his learning. And by 9, he received the sacred thread, and they chanted mantras and gave him the thread ceremony. And soon after that, Jagannath Mishra had a dream. And in the dream, he dreamt that he saw his son as a sannyasi. And he was going with so many other people. Advaita Acharya was there. So many people were there. They were all following him, and he was a sannyasi. So he talked about this dream to Sachidevi. But they never took this very, very seriously. And soon after that, Jagannath Mishra left this world. He became became sick, and then he left this world. So then, this mortified Sachidevi, who only stayed alive because of Nimai. And Nimai promised her that I will never leave you. I will always take care of you. So he became everything to his mother, taking care of her in every way. So soon after that, she decided that he should be married. And a marriage was arranged to one Lakshmi Priya. And Lakshmi Priya was very beautiful. See on the altar, on one side is Lakshmi Priya, on the other side is Vishnu Priya. And Lakshmi Priya and Nimai were married when he was 14 years old. And then he decided to go to Bangladesh to make more his fame as a scholar, and to also to spread his good fortune there and to make some wealth. So he went to Bangladesh and defeated many scholars from place to place. But in the meantime, Lakshmi Devi left this world. And when Lord Chaitanya came back, Sachidevi was very unhappy about this news. But Lord Chaitanya preached to her and explained to her that this world is like that. Things are very temporary. We don't know what will happen. What is our destiny? And she convinced him to marry again. So he married for a second time, and that was Vishnu Priya Devi. Now, I'm going to stop here because, not so much because of the kirtan, but because the next place that we're going to is Srivas Angam, which is just a little bit down from here. It's the home of Srivas Thakur. So we'll continue.